So picture this scene. It's early 1969. You're, what, 19 years old, sitting on a suitcase in your parents' living room. You've signed up for this two-year mission. You've said all the tearful goodbyes, quit your job. You are ready to go Mexico, maybe Argentina. And then the phone rings.
And it's the dreaded administrative halt.
Exactly. The visa didn't come through, so now you're just stuck.
Right. And historically, this was just dead time. You just sit around and wait.
But today, we are doing a deep dive into this very specific moment where a logistical nightmare, a huge visa delay, accidentally created one of the most effective language learning labs the world has ever seen.
It really is a classic case of constraint driving innovation. We're talking about the language training mission, the LTM, at Ricks College in Idaho from 69 to 76.
And before we get into the how, because the methods here are just fascinating, we really have to look at the why. This is not some grand educational plan.
Not at all. It was a holding tank, a warehouse, really, for missionaries who couldn't legally get into their assigned countries yet.
So the church leadership basically said, okay, send them to Ricks, put them in a dorm.
And, you know, have them look at some Spanish books while they wait. It was meant to be a parking lot.
But then something started happening. The data started coming back from the field. And this is the real pivot point. Mission presidents in South America noticed something different about these delayed missionaries.
They weren't just a little better. They were light years ahead. The reports coming back suggested that a missionary who spent just a few weeks in this intensive holding tank was outperforming someone who'd been learning on the street, you know, by immersion for almost a full year.
Wait, that is a staggering metric. A few weeks of structure equals a full year of organic learning. That's the kind of efficiency that makes people at the top sit up and pay attention.
Precisely. That data went all the way up to elders Spencer W. Kimball and Gordon B. Hinckley. They looked at the return on investment and pretty much mandated, okay, we need to stop sending people out cold. Everyone goes through the lab.
So Ricks College goes from being a waiting room to a high-stakes educational laboratory. But you can't just mandate fluency. You need a system, and for that you need an architect. So let's talk about President Ermel Morton.
Ah, Ermel Morton. He's one of those figures that, you know, if you put him in a movie, you'd say he wasn't believable.
How so?
Well, to the students, these naive 19-year-olds, he just looked like a reserved, very geeky old man. That's the quote from the source. He was quiet, unassuming.
But his resume tells a completely different story. The source says he was a student of 60 languages. Not six, 60.
That's right. And student of, here's a bit of an understatement. He wasn't just, you know, learning phrases for a vacation. As a young man in Tonga, Morton was the first person to translate the Book of Mormon and other scriptures into the Tongan language.
Okay, so that implies a level of mastery, that is. It's just hard to overstate. To translate theology, you have to get every single nuance, every preposition right.
Exactly. You're dealing with incredibly complex, high-context ideas. And he brought that same rigor to the LTM. He didn't just hire people. He personally translated the core curriculum into all five languages they taught there: Danish, Finnish, Dutch, Norwegian, and Swedish.
Well, you know, also dabbling in Cantonese and Mandarin on the side.
He was a machine. But he was also smart enough to build a kind of dream team around him. He brought in Lawrence Pearson and C. Bernie Jensen as his counselors.
And these weren't just random volunteers.
No, no. These were serious academics. Pearson was a biology and botany professor with deep connections to Sweden. Jensen was his beloved English professor. All three of them had PhDs. So beneath this religious mission was a foundation of really serious, rigorous academic thought.
They were applying the scientific method to language. Which brings us to their test subjects. You have a campus full of American teenagers.
Described as anxious, confused, excited, and naive.
And most of them are starting from absolute zero. These aren't kids from Europe who grew up hearing different languages. They're from Utah, Idaho. They've probably never heard a single word of Finnish in their entire lives.
And now they're being told to learn it. In 8 weeks.
Let's focus on Finnish for a second. Because in the hierarchy of difficult languages for English speakers, Finnish is way up there.
It is notoriously difficult. It's what's called an agglutinative language.
Okay, break that down for us. What does agglutinative actually mean?
It comes from the Latin for to glue together. So in English, if we want to add meaning, we add separate words. We say, in my big house, four words.
Right.
In Finnish, you can glue all those concepts onto the end of the root word as suffixes. So one very, very long word could mean in my big house or from my big house. The grammar is incredibly precise.
So you can't just swap words. You have to totally rewire how your brain even builds a thought.
Exactly. There's a great quote in the text that sums it up perfectly. There are only two types of people who can learn the Finnish language: Finnish babies and Mormon missionaries.
Which is funny, but it also points to the real challenge. A Finnish baby takes, what, 18 to 24 months to form sentences? That's the natural speed limit.
And Morton's team had to figure out how to break that speed limit and do it in 8 weeks.
So how did they do it?
They developed something they called the Unified Methods.
Sounds a bit ominous, like something out of a sci-fi movie.
It does, but it was really just a highly structured three-part system. You had the method of memorization, the method of review, and the method of study.
Okay, so walk me through a day. It's 6 a.m. I'm in the classroom and office building, the COB. What's first?
Mornings were for the method of memorization. This was all about program speaking and repetitions in unison.
Choral chanting.
Yes, a whole room full of students chanting finished sentences together, over and over and over.
Now, to someone today using a language app, that sounds really archaic. Why do that?
It's about bypassing your analytical brain. As an adult learner, you want to analyze everything, translate it back to English, think about the rule. Well, that's too slow. Choral repetition builds muscle memory in your mouth. It forces your tongue and jaw to make the sounds correctly before your brain has time to get in the way.
It's like learning piano scales. You don't think about the music theory every time you play one. You just train your fingers where to go.
Precisely. You are building a physical reflex. Then, in the evenings, you had the method of review. This was the accountability piece.
You had to pass off what you'd memorized.
A daily test, basically.
Yeah.
You had to recite the material perfectly to an instructor. If you didn't pass, you couldn't move on. It created this intense social pressure. You did not want to be the one holding up the class.
But you can't just parrot sounds. You have to actually understand what you're saying eventually.
And that's where the method of study came in. Specifically, individual analysis. Students got these short, dedicated blocks of time, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, to just stare at a single paragraph and decode it.
10 minutes for one paragraph. That seems incredibly slow for an accelerated program.
It seems slow, but it's deep work. They weren't just reading for the gist. They were taking it apart. Why does this word end in N? Oh, right, that's the genitive case. Why is the word order flipped here?
But this is where they hit a major wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of the most interesting parts of the whole story, the grammar gap.
This is a huge, huge issue. The instructors realized that to explain Finnish grammar, they had to use technical terms, right? Direct object, accusative case, infinitive.
And these 19-year-old American kids,
they had no idea what they were talking about. They spoke English perfectly, but they had no idea how English worked.
They didn't have the meta language.
Exactly. The language to talk about language, if I say the direct object takes the accusative ending and you don't know what a direct object is, I might as well be speaking Martian.
Because in English, we just rely on word order. The dog bit the man. We know who did the biting because dog comes first. We don't change the word dog.
Right. So before they could teach Finnish, the instructors had to give a crash course in English grammar. They had to say, okay, look at this English sentence. See the ball. It receives the action. That's a direct object. Now, here's how we mark that in Finnish.
It's that hidden benefit of learning a really hard language. You end up understanding your own language so much better.
You have to become a linguist just to survive.
So we've got this intense cognitive load. Chanting, memorizing, analyzing. You do that for 12 hours a day in a windowless room, you're going to burn out.
And they knew that. They understood you had to manage the emotional side of things. They needed immersion, but not just linguistic immersion. They built a whole cultural ecosystem.
Let's talk about the living quarters. The Milligan apartments.
Also known as the Pink, this kind of odd pink building where they all lived. But the immersion followed them home right into the cafeteria. You didn't just sit with your friends. You sat by language group.
So you have the Finnish table, the Swedish table.
Exactly. And imagine trying to ask for the salt. You're tired, you're hungry, but you are forced to use the language. It makes it a tool for survival, not just a subject in a book.
But they also brought in, well, ringers isn't the right word, cultural ambassadors, the Nyborgs.
Keith and Rijah Nyborg. They were essential. You can learn grammar from a textbook, but you have to catch culture from people. Rijah was a native Finn. Her family had actually fled Viipuri during the war. Keith had been a guide at the Helsinki Olympics in 52.
So they brought a level of authenticity that's just impossible to fake.
They were the cool factor. They hosted these culture nights that were supposedly the highlight of the week. They made Finland seem like this heroic, mythical place that was worth all the pain of the grammar drills.
And they took that idea to a very literal place with the field trips to Finlandia Ranch.
This is my favorite part of the story. They built an authentic, wood-fired Finnish sauna out by a stream.
And we should be clear, this is not a spa day.
No, this is a physical lesson. In the middle of an Idaho winter, which is brutally cold, they'd pack these students into this superheated sauna, and then they'd all run out and jump into an icy creek or roll around in the snow.
Why? I mean, beyond the tradition, why waste study time freezing your students?
It wakes you up. It anchors the memory. When you feel that shock of the cold, Finland stops being an idea on a map. It's a real physical sensation. It creates this vivid emotional memory that you just can't get from a book.
And speaking of breaking the monotony, there was also the science connection. You mentioned Brother Pearson, the botanist.
Yes. They'd take trips to Yellowstone, which is nearby, but Pearson wouldn't just let them look at the geysers. He'd give them these university-level lectures on geology, on the headwaters of the Snake and Missouri rivers.
It feels almost like a liberal arts approach to language learning.
It is. The idea was that you shouldn't just be a robot reciting phrases. You should be a curious, well-rounded person. And again, it prevents burnout by using a completely different part of your brain.
But even with saunas and geology, we have to talk about the emotional toll. The source materials is very honest that this was a pressure cooker and people cracked.
Absolutely. The learning curve was vertical. The author of the source, Willy Ralph Kern, tells this really personal story. He calls it the staircase story.
Walk us through that one.
So Kern is an instructor. He's in the middle of a lesson, and one of his students just snaps. He runs out of the room crying, head in his hands, saying, "I can't do this. I'm not smart enough. I'm going home."
I think anyone who's tried to learn a truly complex skill has had that exact feeling of despair, that your brain is just, it's not capable.
Totally. And look at how Kern responds. This is the key. He doesn't tell him to man up. He doesn't scold him. He follows the student out, sits in on the staircase next to him, puts his arm around him, and just talks to him.
There's a concept in educational psychology called the effective filter.
Yes, Stephen Krashen's theory. The basic idea is that if a learner is stressed or anxious, this metaphorical filter goes up and new information just bounces off. It can't get into the part of your brain that acquires language. You literally cannot learn when you are in panic mode.
So Kern's job in that moment wasn't to teach Finnish. It was to lower the filter.
He had to restore that student's psychological safety. He framed it spiritually, you know, reminding him of his purpose. But on a human level, he was just offering connection. He was saying, "I'm with you. We can get through this."
And the student. He went back to class.
He did. And the beautiful footnote to that story is that years later, that same student still carries his little red Santa Kirja, his Finnish dictionary. It became a trophy, a symbol of the moment he didn't quit.
That combination seems to be the secret sauce of the LTM. You have these incredibly high expectations, learn one of the world's hardest languages in 8 weeks, paired with incredibly high support.
I will sit on the stairs and cry with you if I have to. That's the formula. High challenge, high support. If you have high challenge and low support, people quit. Low challenge and high support, people get bored. They found that sweet spot.
And it didn't just change the students. It changed the teachers. The author, Kern, says he never felt particularly smart in high school.
Which is such a relatable feeling. He didn't see himself as an academic, but after he mastered Finnish and then successfully taught it to someone else, he had this realization. He thought, wait a minute, my brain really does work. I can do hard things.
And that confidence carried him into a whole career in chemistry and education.
It taught him the ultimate meta skill, right? Learning how to learn. Once you realize any hard subject is just a series of small, manageable steps, like decoding one paragraph or memorizing one list, you realize you can learn anything.
So when we step back, this entire incredible system, it all started with a visa delay, a bureaucratic screw up.
A happy accident.
Yeah. If those visas from Mexico had just arrived on time, they might have spent another 20 years using the old inefficient sink or swim method.
It's a powerful lesson in reframing obstacles. Sometimes the waiting room isn't a delay, it's an incubator. That constraint forced them to build a prototype that ended up being way better than the original plan.
So, bringing this all back to you, the listener, maybe you're not trying to learn Finnish. Maybe you're just trying to learn a new skill for your job or figure out how to bake bread or understand crypto.
The LTM principles still apply. First, you need structure. Don't just dabble. Have a method. Second, learn the meta language. Understand the underlying rules of whatever you're doing.
And third,
find your community. Find that cafeteria table where you're forced to practice. And find a mentor who's willing to sit on the stairs with you when you inevitably hit that wall.
And if all else fails, go jump in a frozen creek.
It definitely wakes you up.
I think I will take your word for it. A huge thank you to Veli Ralph Kern for documenting this incredible piece of educational history.
It was a real pleasure to unpack it.
And thank you for listening. Keep learning, stay curious, and we'll see you on the next deep dive.